Hello everyone. Can you hear me all right? Good morning. Thanks for making it to such an early morning session on a Wednesday in Las Vegas. We really appreciate it. You know, being engineers from Microsoft, it becomes a little early for us too. So I'm really surprised and really glad with the turnout. My name is Anjali. I'm a program manager on the Azure Services for Windows Server team. Today, I'm going to be presenting with Mark Omeno and Nick Vanderzweep from Cloud Cruiser. And we have some exciting stuff for you this morning, so I'm very excited to share this with you. You know, you have seen this slide in Brad Anderson's keynote on Monday, right? Remember this? So Microsoft's Cloud OS vision, what is that really about? It's about providing the same platform, whether it's across Microsoft's public cloud, which is Azure, or a private cloud in a hosting service provider's data center, or in an enterprise. And this same cloud platform is going to enable a consistent experience across all three, so that whenever users come in, they see the same consistent experiences of using the services and assigning resources for themselves. When developers come along, they use the same API layer in order to develop their applications. So how are we really enabling this cloud OS? If you go to Microsoft.com/hosting, you can read more about what this cloud OS vision is about. It's about using our robust Windows Server as the foundation of the cloud OS platform, using System Center on top, the family of the System Center components, and the new Windows Azure services for Windows Server, which is now available for download immediately. It is a free download, so you can just, as long as you have Windows Server, System Center, 2012 SP1, you can deploy this and start using the services that come along with the Windows Azure services for Windows Server. What are we bringing in this? So, I'm sorry, I'm having some issues with this clicker. We're bringing websites, virtual machines, and a service management portal and API. Let's talk about some details for each of these areas. So websites, you know, how many folks have used websites in Windows Azure? Folks have used it? All right, so the same runtime that is used in the Windows Azure websites was modified just a little bit to work on Windows Server. The code is 90% the same, and that is why we can get the same experiences and the same API and the consistency, and that enables workload portability as well. So if a developer creates a website in Windows Azure, they can easily port it to the on-premise stack with Windows Server in the backend. We have support from classic ASP to PHP, Node.js. There is also source integration with the Git repository. And there is a fully integrated web app gallery. So if a user wants to create a WordPress blog, they can do it in a matter of clicks, really. The MySQL database is provisioned in the backend, you know, linked with the website, and they're ready to go. One of the features that hosters really like about the website's runtime is the ability to scale it up. So what that means is, you know, when a user creates a website, by default, it's placed on a shared instance where there are multiple websites, you know, enabling the multi-tenancy. And through one click, a user can decide that I actually want to run my website on a dedicated instance. In fact, I want to scale it over multiple dedicated instances. So from right there, you know, a hoster can charge like $5 a month for running the website on a shared instance, and as soon as they move it to a dedicated instance, it could go to $50 a month or more, depending on what the resources are, what the, you know, SLA is, et cetera. So let's look at infrastructure as a service. We're really enabling high-density VM hosting. And we are going to dig into detail for this area. It is built on Microsoft's Hyper-V, and it is actually enabled by System Center VMM in the backend. So System Center VMM, it's exposed, all the functionality is exposed through the Service Provider Foundation API, and that is what gets plugged into the experiences stack in order to be able to use, create virtual machines, remote into them, et cetera. And we'll dig into the details in a little bit. The portal and API, what's this about? So the portal where the user is actually able to access these services from is the same portal as Azure. It is literally the same framework that is ported and used on the on-premise stack as well. This portal is, a modern Metro-themed, based on web standards, uses HTML, CSS, JavaScript, is device-friendly, is browser-friendly, can be used with Chrome, Firefox, can be used on, Surface, iPads, what have you. And as the Azure framework is revved to, for improvements, et cetera, we will get the same improvements on the on-premise as well, maintaining the consistency of the experiences promise. This portal is also white label ready. It can be skinned to add your logos, your colors to make it yours. There is also the service management API layer that the portal sits on in order to be able to communicate to these services, and folks can use the API layer directly as well. This API layer is also consistent with Azure's API layer, and it can be extended, more services can be added, and it is ready. So as new services come in Azure, they can also be ported to on-premise with a little bit of work. So that is the overall of, what the pieces are. And now we're going to start digging a little deeper into the details. So I missed a code actually at the bottom of the screen. This is a blogger from GigaOM who said, Microsoft partners can offer customers the same Azure-like experience without actually using Microsoft's cloud. But of course, he's talking about without using Microsoft's public cloud, but Microsoft's private cloud enables you to get these experiences. So let's talk about, the layering. This is just a logical layering to visualize what this looks like, even though I've been very descriptive in my actions. The portal sits on top, communicates through the API to the different services that are enabled. The websites is enabled on Server 2012. It has a bunch of pieces, the controller, the web workers, where the websites actually reside on, publishers, front ends, et cetera. And this can all be deployed through the link that I had shown you before. Virtual machines enabled by System Center 2012 SP1 with the Service Provider Foundation layer on top, and third-party services can plug in. Later on in the session, I will talk about certain folks who have done proof of concepts and also folks who have production-ready solutions, like the demo you're going to see towards the end of the session. Folks have done and are available for you to use. Let's take one more layer deeper now. What's really going on? So now on the right hand of the screen, you are seeing what the Azure stack looks like. The same portal, the same API, and all the services are running on the Windows Azure Fabric. Now, this portal, it's a self-service portal. I can come in as a user, and my self-service, I can create VMs, I can create websites, I can create service bus messaging queues, et cetera, right? And this happens by, I sign on for an Azure subscription, and the subscription determines what services I'm allowed to use and what lights up in my portal. So the same concepts have been done on the on-premise as well. We brought the same framework, the same exact portal on-premise to work on Windows Server. It is, again, a subscription-based model that I'll show you as well. In Azure, folks are using the operations team. It's a large operations team running thousands of servers and using a lot of in-house tools and PowerShell scripts to maintain it, to service it, et cetera. But on-premise, we have also provided an administrative view into what the services are. So I can manage what my website cloud looks like, what my virtual machine cloud looks like, and you know, create plans, which is basically a set of services that I put together and brand. So I can offer a gold plan that offers 10 websites and 3 virtual machines and put a price associated to it. And a user comes on, signs on for that plan, creates a subscription, and goes on through the tenant portal. We brought the same service management API, right, that the portals communicate through and can be accessed directly. And we started bringing on the services. Websites, like I said, the runtime is it's pretty much the same. VMs is powered by System Center, you know, arguably more robust. And SQL, instead of SQL Azure, it's now enabled on SQL Server. And we have a list of services that are going to be brought on for future releases. So if something's in Azure, you know, we will be bringing that in the future as well to on-premise. So with that, I'm actually going to move to a short demo before handing it off to Mark for the details. So I want to start with, you know, this is my account on Windows Azure, right? Folks have seen this portal. I have this list of services that are available to me. Now, I'm going to switch to the Azure services for Windows Server portal, exactly the same portal. Now, this is not demoware, right? This is the actual bits that are available for download. We actually put them on a bunch of servers at SoftLayer and are running the service from there. So if you'll notice in the URL, you know, it's not local. It's running in SoftLayer. So the services that I have available are websites, virtual machines, virtual networks, SQL, and MySQL databases. And, you know, we were talking about it. You can go create websites, et cetera. I won't go into the details over here. I want to also show you the administrative portal. The same UX framework, the colors are a little different. You know, it says service management portal on the top left. And if you look at what I'm managing in the administrative portal, instead of websites, I'm managing a website cloud. Instead of virtual machines, I'm managing a virtual machines cloud. I can create plans. So, you know, if we just drill into the website cloud a little bit, you will see that I can see the, you know, overall health of my system. I can see the different roles that are running. Oh, is something wrong with them or not? I can see a full list of websites created by every single user. And I have VM clouds as well. I can go into plans, quickly author a plan, you know, MMS demo. And I can select what services I want to offer. Once this plan is created, I can even make it public. You know, public means that any user will be able to sign up for it, and I can provide description in the text about what the pricing is. I can keep it private, so I can keep it for just some of my customers. Now, with that, I'm going to hand it to Mark to dig into the details of IaaS.
Thank you, Anjali. Okay, I'm going to drill down into how you can use this technology to provide infrastructure as a service. How many here are familiar with Virtual Machine Manager, Hyper-V? Should be most everybody. Okay, so we're just enabling this pattern that we've been talking about where you configure a fabric, abstract the fabric away in a cloud, then delegate that cloud to a self-service user who then can use that cloud to manage VMs. Okay, so we're taking this pattern and then applying it to Windows Server, System Center, Service Provider Foundation, and Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. Okay, So what does the stack look like on the infrastructure as a service side? First of all, we have stamps, which are individual scale units. Okay, so here you would say they're three separate VMM servers with their own set of compute, fabric, and storage that are managing. All right. Then there's a layer called the service provider foundation layer that enables aggregation across the stamps. Okay, so that from the same endpoint, from the same server, you can access multiple backends. Okay, maybe different data centers, for example. Then there's a REST OData API, right, which provides a web API to get at those that capacity, the clouds that are exposed from those servers. And then also there's extensibility through automation. It also provides multi-tenancy for the infrastructure as a service. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Okay. Then that plugs into, as one of the services, the VM service, right, into the service management API that Anjali was talking about. All right, and then you can consume that service either through the API or the portal. Okay, so if I have multiple tenants, they'll be isolated from each other via subscription in the service management API, a tenant in the service provider foundation layer, and a virtual machine manager tenant admin user role in virtual machine manager. Okay. So a tenant can access their capacity by hitting the browser, using a browser to hit the portal, or going directly against the API by presenting a certificate. Okay, and they would access that through their subscription. All right, so that's the architecture of the infrastructure as a service offering. All right. So a little bit more about Service Provider Foundation. As I mentioned before, it's using OData, which is one of the protocols that a lot of Microsoft services are using, and a lot of teams at Microsoft have started to adopt. So there's most of the new Azure services will be OData compliant in their API. I believe the Exchange team is using this, and some of the other teams, I think Netflix uses this. So this is a kind of a standardized protocol. Inside of SPF, it's running on server and System Center 2012 SP1, and it offers virtual machines. In the API, you can access VMM service templates and deploy them. And then it also has virtual machine networks and integration with Orchestrator. Okay. Okay, so I wanted to give a brief overview of the underlying components, but I really want to spend most of the time talking about the infrastructure as a service offering within the Azure services. Okay, so let's start with the admin side. All right, so Anjali had talked about this, but I want to drill down a little bit deeper into some of the pieces of these offers. So the first concept is a resource provider. So a resource provider does what the term describes. So it provides, you use a resource provider to provide resources through a service, okay? So this would be virtual machines, websites, databases, things like that. Okay, so each one of those is a type of resource, okay? These are driven via REST APIs, right? And then that manage and create those resources. Very straightforward, okay? So each thing that plugs into the service management API is another resource provider, right? Then there's a plan. Okay, a plan, as you saw from Anjali's quick overview, is a collection of these of services from these resource providers. Okay, and then a plan is offered to a tenant. So it's sort of like a service catalog offering. It's not exactly the same thing in the ITIL terms, but it's an offering to a tenant for them to subscribe to. Okay, In this release of the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, users are managed in a separate user database in the service management API layer, okay? So using ASP.NET membership. Active Directory integration, which we need to have for enterprise adoption, all right, is coming in a future release, okay? So once you have a user that subscribes to a plan, they create a subscription, okay? And that's their account, basically. That's the way that they get access to their service. So if you've ever used Azure before, that's how you get access to your billing entity in Azure, for example. And it's the same concept here, the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. So you sign up for a plan, you get a GUID that's associated with your subscription, right? And then you can access those services. Your service consumption will be metered, your usage will be metered, and then you can be billed accordingly to that usage, all right? Those subscriptions are also in this framework, also kind of describing how much you can consume. So unlike Azure, which has infinity pay-as-you-go just about, like, I mean, I guess there's some big limits, like 50 VMs or something per subscription, something like that. In this case, a service provider or a service offerer may want to strict a lot more than that. So, for example, in a private cloud, if you're going to offer this, you might only offer every dev like the ability to create 5 or 10 VMs or something. And they can only use N CPUs and N amount of storage or something. So that the quota is there to kind of constrain and put guide rails on the usage of the service. And there's also a potential for doing access control as well. And I'll show you what that looks like in the virtual machines offering. So now let's get into kind of how it works. How do the mechanics go within the components? So I have this in my diagram here. Windows Azure Services, it has a database that has plan subscriptions in these user accounts. And then it has a service management API. It has a UX for a tenant and for admin. Okay. Then I have the System Center components, Virtual Machine Manager, SPF. SPF has in its database a specific subset of the plan that's pertains to infrastructure as a service. It has tenants and user roles that correspond to VMM user roles. And then it has the stamps, different VMM servers they can access. All right. So the admin, to set it up, they just add the endpoint to the service management API. I'll show you what that looks like. It's really simple. And then add each VMM server they want to access. Okay. And then they create a plan. Right. And Anjali showed you a little bit about that. I'll go into a little bit more detail in a second in a demo. All right. And now a tenant can subscribe to that plan, or an admin can create that subscription for them, either way. So you can have some other external sign-up process that then creates a subscription, which you then, send an email or something to the user to say, hey, go access your subscription with this account. When the tenant subscribes to the plan, a subscription is created, and then they can go and use that capacity. Okay? So that's the end-to-end kind of process. Now, we've had some people trying to deploy this guy already, okay? So this integrations. And we've learned some things. So I wanted to kind of go through a little bit of those details, because you'll find it useful when you try it out yourselves. Okay? So one of the things that you have to do to get this thing working end-to-end is when you install SPF, you have to make sure that the application pool identity is a domain user and not a network service account. So that's one thing. It's very straightforward. But you have to do that. You need admin access to the database and a VMM. You need to configure SPF in the IIS settings to use basic auth. Okay? And then this tricky little thing, we have to add a local user on the SPF server. And there's some groups there. And you have to basically add that user to the group. So instead of having a domain user, you have to have a local user. So that's just another tip you have to follow. And then you use that account to register the connection between the service management API and SPF. Okay? And then everything else should be taken care of for you. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't have Active Directory integration yet. Okay, so instead of talking about that, I'll show you a little bit what I meant by setting up SPF in the demo right now. Here we go. All right. So here I'm on the VMM server that also has SPF installed. And this is running at SoftLayer, as Anjali had mentioned before. So Virtual Machine Manager, I have a few clouds there. I have the dev and test production and staging cloud. I have one host that's kind of medium-sized. I have some networks down here, a bunch of networks. Expose that, and then I have SPF installed, okay? So SPF, as I mentioned before, is installed as an IIS service, right, an IIS application. Okay, so there's this SPF, okay, here. You can see in the application pool, I'm running as a domain user, right, not a network service. I guess I can do this real quick. Down here in the local, see, I made an SPF user, local user there. And then in the groups down here, and there's three groups that you need to use for SPF to control access to the front end. And in each one of those groups, I added the SPF user. So that's what I mean by having a local user and local groups, okay? So you just need to do that, or you'll have some issues with connections and you won't know why. Okay. So now let's look at the portal side. So we've gone with the VMM, SPF, and now let's look at the portal. Okay. So this is the admin portal. All right. I'm on the virtual machine cloud or VM clouds tab, right? And when you'll see a little quick start menu here, right? And it asks you to register an SPF endpoint. And then you can also, the next one will say, pick a VMM server. Didn't say that, but that's what it means. And then the last one is that there's some usage metering as well, endpoint. Okay, so all you have to do is add the URI for the SPF service and add the local user account that we just looked at. Okay, once you do that, then these clouds will appear. And you can see these are the same clouds that we're running on the VMM server. All right. If I drill into the dev and test cloud, you can see that there's a measure of how much capacity has been used on that cloud. Okay, so if I have the amount of cores, RAM, storage, number of VMs that are available on that cloud. Okay, so I have some measure of how much capacity is available. Okay. Now let me back out of this and go down to plans. Okay. I'll find the plan that I'm using now. Okay, and I can drill into that plan. Okay, and I'll go just down into the virtual machine clouds one. And you can see here, I can pick which VMM server to use and the cloud to use. That's here. So I picked... that's just the name of the VM server that I picked. And then the cloud is the dev and test cloud. Down here, as I was mentioning, you can set quotas, which are the same quotas on a user role in VMM. Okay, this is just number of VMs, number of cores, how much RAM, how much storage that user role can use. So in this case, I limited it to 5 VMs, 20 cores, et cetera. Okay, you can choose what templates are available. So in this case, I have just a Windows Server 2012 template, VM template. You can pick allowed hardware configurations, which are the hardware profiles in VMM, and then what networks, and then allowed permissions. Okay, so that's how I set up a plan, and then I offer that plan to a tenant, and when they subscribe to it, they get a user role with that configuration. All right, so that's what I wanted to show on the admin side. Okay, so a little bit more on usage metering, okay? So there is a usage metering endpoint that goes against the operations manager, system center operations manager, data warehouse data. So it takes advantage of the data pipe, the VMM management pack, between virtual machine manager and operations manager that brings over those perf counters on usage, okay? So it supports per subscription metering, which Nick will show later on how they might use that. It's gathered into a usage database, which is an exposed through a REST API, okay? And this, I think I showed that there was a usage endpoint in SPF, and then The thing is that it requires, I think, update rollup 1, which was released in January of this year. Okay? It's a little bit of a diagram of how that's working. So basically there's, you know, the system center components that are exposed through a REST endpoint that the service and management API grabs and hits that endpoint and grabs usage data and then dumps it into the usage data cache. So you could think of that database as not a data warehouse with, you know, many a year or, you know, many months of data. It's like a very short-term cache that then a billing API can, that exposes that data through a billing API, and then a back-end system that does billing, like Cloud Cruiser's service, it will actually collect up the data and have that data in for long-term access. Okay. I know you can't read this, but this, I just wanted to write down on the deck all the different metrics. But I'll just describe them. So, memory allocated, memory consumed, CPU allocated, CPU consumed, or CPU percentage utilization over time, disk I/O, and then I think it's network I/O, basically network in and out. Okay, so those are kind of the meters that are available. All right, so I just want to describe that. It's in the deck, so you can look at it later. Now, a tenant. So the main thing here is that we wanted to make sure that the user experience was consistent with Azure. It's not exactly the same, right? On the back end, we're using VM templates to create VMs in Virtual Machine Manager. In Azure, we're taking an image and applying some settings to that, and then it's going off and building something on the Windows Azure Fabric. So instead of having the backends being consistent, we at least wanted to have the user experience consistent. Over time, we are working on having the APIs consistent and the backends more consistent as well. Okay. Again, we had talked about this. You log in with your account. You get access to your subscription. It turns out that we thought that having multiple subscriptions would be useful, so we added that feature in. So with the same user account, you can have multiple subscriptions. So you can subscribe to some subscription on the dev test cloud and some different subscription on the production cloud, for example. Okay, and then it manages virtual machines and uses virtual machine networks. I did include a bunch of screenshots that are hidden from the deck, so you can look back at this later if you want to see kind of the details of the features, but let's just go straight to the demo. This one. Okay, so this was the admin portal, so let's go to the tenant portal. All right, so Anjali already showed the tour of this, so I'll just go straight to virtual machines. So here I created one already, but let me create another one. So I'll go down to the new button. There's a quick create option, right, where I just supply a VM name and password, and it creates a VM, but I'll take a little bit longer route, and I'll go through the custom create process. Okay, so MMS demo VM, hit next. Now it's hitting VMM and looking at the VMM library, looking at my user role and exposing only the ones that are available to me. So you notice down here on templates, I had 3 templates in VMM, but only one for the subscription, so that's the only one I have access to right now, right? So there's some RBAC built in there, right? So I'll pick the Windows Server template and supply the admin password. Product key is optional, so I'll skip that. Then all I have to do is pick a VM network that's accessible to me, and I hit go, and it creates starting to create a VM. Instead of waiting for a few minutes for the VM to be created, we can go in and drill down and look at the details of one that I've already done. Okay, so there's this one called MarkUVM. I'll just go into that one. Okay, now this is going back and hitting the SPF API, grabbing the details from that particular VM and from VMM and bringing it back up to the UI, right? So you see here at the beginning, there's this dashboard of usage of CPU, storage, and network I/O. Okay, so that's kind of real-time metering of what's going on with that VM. Down here, you'll see that I have status, computer name, OS, and the external IP address that's exposed from SoftLayer's network out to the internet, so I can remote desktop to it for my demo. Okay, it's coming from a pool of public IP addresses. Over here, you can see that I have three lines. I don't know if you can tell the difference between the two gray lines, but I have the amount of capacity used, amount of my quota used by this particular VM. The dark gray would be how much extra I'm using for the other new VM that I just started creating, right? And then to the right of that over here is the total usage across my quota, okay? Down here at the bottom, you can see I have a bunch of actions, so I can RDP to this machine through its public IP address, okay? So this is a similar mechanism to how it works with Azure, okay? So I can get into that box that way, right? I can pause it, I can shut it down, I can stop it, so let me just stop it. It'll take a second to stop it. So it's running in the background there. Okay, so now it's stopped. So you can see down here the buttons changed, and now I have a start button. But I also have this attach and detach button, so if I click on that, sometimes it doesn't work. Yeah, I don't know why it's not working. So go to configure. Here I can change the size of a VM. So I have it stopped, and now I can only change it to one of the hardware profiles at a configuration. So I can go to the minimal or the large, okay? So those are the only ones I have available, so you can kind of control and standardize the sizes of the VMs, either through the VM template or through the hardware profile. Let's see. Right, so it's not working. Okay. That's pretty much the things that are available for managing the VM as a tenant. All of this functionality, plus more, are exposed through the REST API layer as well. So the tenant can just upload their certificate that they can access, and they can access that through a REST API or PowerShell commandlets even. And I don't have a demo of that right now. Okay. All right, with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Anjali.
Thank you, Mark. So we also wanted to share with you what the deployment process is like, what are the things you should look out for. We actually haven't shared this in any presentation before, so it would be useful to get your feedback if this is useful or not. We have a pretty detailed, some folks say it's a little too big, install guide available at the URL. And we have an express install where all the components that you see on the screen can be deployed on a single server. If you're testing it out in your lab, that is the, just want to play around with the portal, that's the thing we would recommend. For production, we recommend a distributed setup, of course. And the distributed setup contains of, you've seen the tenant portal. There is a tenant public API. What is this tenant public API? You remember I was talking about how developers can go directly against the API. For that, they first need to create a subscription through the tenant portal, or an admin can create it for them, and they have to upload a certificate to the tenant portal, and the certificate has to be embedded in the header of every API call that goes against the tenant public API. And that's when they can create websites, create VMs, start, stop, et cetera. And the tenant, so, you know, the service management API, I should have started with that. The service management API is divided into admin API, where all the admin operations go to, the most elevated access. The tenant API, where the tenant portal goes to, and the tenant public API that exposes the same functionality that is available in tenant portal, but also available to developers directly. We recommend that you put the tenant portal and tenant public API on internet facing and the rest of it behind the firewall. We also recommend that you have a separate SQL Server instance for all the configuration databases that are required for Azure services for Windows Server. For high availability, we have seen that in our tests that tenant portal is typically the bottleneck. So we recommend you put it behind a hardware load balancer. You can use Windows NLP as well. For SQL, we support always-on availability as well as failover cluster. Our test team recommends that you use always-on because it's cheaper, but you do have, you know, the downside of the performance overhead because of the dual write. So it's really up to you and what you want in your environment. And during the install process, take snapshots. Pre-configuration, take a snapshot. Post-configuration, take a snapshot. Post-install, take a snapshot. Because, you know, with this whole distributed install, sometimes it takes a little bit. So we really recommend going that route. We also wanted to talk about how you plan for your capacity. We have a document where all the details that I'm going to share are already written, but I just wanted to bring some things and highlight them. So this is what our test infrastructure looked like. We deployed the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server on a set of seven machines, all dual core, 4GB RAM. And we had two SQL instances, one for the configuration databases, one for the SQL Server to provide the SQL databases service, and one MySQL Server. And we put the admin API, the SQL resource provider, MySQL resource provider, and the usage all on one box. You remember that we had mentioned that, I mentioned in the previous slide that tenant portal is typically the bottleneck. So those are the results I wanted to share with you. We started off with about 8,000 users and started off with, 5,000 websites and 6,500 SQL MySQL databases. And ran these tests, this workload mix, for about 3 hours till we reached to 10,000 subscriptions. So we had 8,000 users. Each user had one subscription, leading to 8,000 subscriptions, and it grew over the period of 3 hours. The CRUD operations are as they are, mostly read, some create updates and deletes. And these were the results we saw. Now, as you can see, the results are not linear. If you have 6 instances of the tenant portal, you can run like 10,000 concurrent users. And from our research, we've seen that the number of concurrent users is typically 20% of your total number of users. Of course, it can vary from environment to environment. And the response times for each of those CRUD operations was under 5 seconds. So these are the results that we saw, and hopefully these results will help you plan for your environment and your capacity. The next thing we really wanted to drill into was, yes, this, stack is available, the experience looks the same, et cetera. How do I make it mine? What are the ways that I can customize the portal? What are the ways in which I can extend it to add my own services? So, now this stack, you recognize this image, right? So the tenant portal, I'd mentioned it's white label ready. So you can completely theme the portal. Colors can be changed. Logos can be changed. To really make the experience a little bit more unique than it is for Azure. Services can be added. Folks have been talking to us about the stack doesn't support this service. I have an immediate need for it. How do I add it? So Aprenda does PaaS, and they actually did a proof of concept with us where they enabled an experience on the tenant side, an experience on the administrator side, and they did a REST API wrapper around their current service and registered it with the service management API, and the experiences lit up in the admin and tenant portals. And, you know, we'll talk a little more about this and exactly how you can do it for your services. Of course, you know, you could theme the portal. You can also completely replace the portal and call the API directly through your control panel. Parallels did a proof of concept with us as well, where they had the ability for a user to come sign in into the Parallels sign up. You know, that was separate. But they could sign up for a plan that was offered by Azure Services, and they could also go create a website. So that proof of concept was also done to see if this worked. And finally, was, you know, arguably one of the most important things is usage. Mark talked about how there is a usage database, you know, as part of the service management API, and we expose usage and a usage endpoint in order to provide previous data for plans and subscriptions, like all the plans and subscriptions, and also ongoing data, the metered data, to billing and chargeback systems. And we have a sample for Zora, and Cloud Cruiser has actually taken it to the next level of, and that's the demo you're going to see later. Now, all of this, the samples, the APIs, et cetera, on how you can enable this for yourself are available on the Download Center. We're going to dig into the details of each of what's available right now. So custom themes, you know. This was one of the, this is the sample theming kits that's available. Can you guys see the screen, you know? If the there is a white background here. The background has been replaced. From the demo, you saw that the portals were blue in color. The colors have been changed to make it gray. And the step wizard has been changed to make it green. This sample is actually available for download. And just, you know, a set of images and CSS that you can change for yourself and apply it and see what that looks like. Instead of service management portal, there is a banner for Contoso. So, you know, this is like Contoso's offering of their version of Azure Services for Windows Server. Next, we'll go to custom portals. These are some of the screenshots from the proof of concept that Parallels had done. And here are a couple of examples of like how you can create a blank website. What are the API calls you really need to make? So, you know, you create a user subscription. The user subscription has to be created against the admin API endpoint. So if you see on here, you know, the HTTP post call is going against the admin endpoint, and you are providing a user's email address and the plan that they want to offer for, they want to sign up for. And this will go create a subscription for the user. Once the subscription is created, this subscription can be used to create a blank website. Now, to create a blank website, we go against the tenant API endpoint, provide the subscription ID, provide the service that you want to go against. So in this case, this is web spaces, and provide the name of the website. You know, say that it does not have to be linked to any SQL or MySQL databases. Those parameters are not in here. And a blank website will be created. So similar examples on how you can create a WordPress app, how you can create VMs, all of this is available in the API doc that's available for download. Let's look at the add-on services. I mentioned that Aprenda had done a proof of concept. In this download pack, we actually have a sample of how website domains can be bought through GoDaddy. Now, you know, GoDaddy's business, like, oh, I can go buy a website domain name. What they also do is provide reseller APIs for other hosters to be able to go buy the domain names from GoDaddy. And that's exactly what this extension is about. So for this extension, so here are a couple of screenshots. This is, you know, on the admin side, there is a website domain extension where, you know, you link it to the backend, the, from where you're buying the domain names from, the GoDaddy backend. There is an extension in the plans. Oh, this is what I want to make available in my plan. So .com has a particular price. .net has a particular price. And on the tenant side, how can I go buy these domain names? So, you know, basically, if you wanted to create a service, you're going to have to create the admin plan and tenant extensions. You're going to have to make controllers for both the admin website as well as the tenant website. And build a REST API wrapper, and finally register your service with the service management API for the experiences to light up in the portals. Again, the sample is available. And finally, coming to the usage, so on this screen, you know, this is a modification of what Mark showed you. It's more horizontal than vertical. And there is, in blue, there is a resource provider. So this resource provider could be websites, could be VMs. You know, for websites, the usage data that is exposed is just number of websites, whether it's running on a shared instance or, you know, the number of dedicated instances it's running on, CPU, memory, et cetera. This data, this usage data per resource is pulled in via a collector schedule that is runs in the Azure services for Windows Server and is stored in a database. Now, this database is not a long-lived database. It stores it like on default for 3 weeks. You guys can go configure it. And this database exposes an endpoint, two endpoints actually, one for the billing service or chargeback service to go get the existing plans and subscription data, the all-up list of plans and subscriptions, and then data on an ongoing basis, store it for themselves, and expose it through invoices or chargeback sheets, etc. And on our download page, we have a sample that works with Zora. Of course, like if you have your own billing system, you're going to have to modify it a little bit in order to make it work with your own billing system. And like I had mentioned, Cloud Cruiser has this available. And with that, I'm going to hand this to Nick to show us this demo.
Thanks, Anjali. Yeah, thanks very much, Anjali. Let me give a little bit of preamble to Cloud Cruiser and what we do. We do financial management, and we have integrated with System Center. You deploy System Center and you set up a private cloud, it manages the finances within that. We've now done that same integration, or even a better integration, with Azure Services for Windows Server. The value that we provide by IT financial management is we drive for lower cost, and for a hoster, we'll drive down the costs and drive up your margin, so you can become a much more profitable organization. This is important for a private cloud because as you give self-service to end users and they're deploying resources, they're not going to shut them down unless there's a cost associated with it. So we provide that incentive to turn things off when you don't need it, drive down your usage costs, and be much more cost effective. From a service provider, we provide auditable invoicing, for instance. So the types of things that we do is we see everything. We see all the data. We go to the APIs from Azure Services for Windows Server, pull in subscriptions, pull in data. We go beyond that. We pull in data from your service desk, ticketing systems, labor, everything goes in, and then we render invoices back to tenants. So auditable, and those invoices, we have a BI system. The tenants can log in, see their invoice, drill into it, And if you're a service provider, this is important because if you provide an invoice to the customer and it's not auditable, they're going to argue with you and you're going to have to give them a 20% discount to resolve the issues. We have a fully auditable system of record. And then we do financial usage budgeting and quotas as well that we've built into this. So the best way to see this is to do a demo. So I've got a live demo set up here. What I need to do is just flip to our system, and hopefully that comes up, and I'll just log in. And what we are doing here is we have a Azure Services for Windows system set up. We are, imagine if you would, we are a hoster, a service provider, and we have a whole set of tenants, a whole set of clients. And this, when you first log in as the administrator, you see the dashboard, which shows you first all of the tenants. Now, here's our top five tenants. I've got clients of Pepsi and Coke and Dr. Pepper. I can drill into that, looking at the specific subscribers like departments, sales department, marketing departments, driving it all the way down to the plan level that Anjali and Mark were showing you how to set up. We're pulling that data in, so we can drill it down and see how much revenue we're making, how many charges we're making, all the way down to those plans and each of those subscribers. Now, if you look at the bottom part of the screen, you'll see our top services that we've sold to these clients. In this particular case, virtual machines is our big seller. So we've been invoicing and collecting revenue on many virtual machines, but there's also websites and silver SQL servers, gold SQL servers that you're getting from the various different plans. So that's from the dashboard perspective. What gets really interesting is if you go in and you do reports, and if you look at, for instance, a cost trend report, we can show the client, you know, what is the trends. You know, in this particular case, we started our Azure Services for Windows server hosting environment on January 1st. We've had subscriptions set up by Coke and Dr. Pepper and Pepsi, and you can see the growth rates of those. You'll notice there's a dip at the end here. That's because we're active. We're pulling data all the way during the month, so it's down a little bit because it's only like the 10th of April right now. But it's going up over time as well. And you can drill into this data because it's an active BI system and drill down into each of these clients. The client has the ability to log in and see their invoice that they can get either by email, or they can log in and they can look at that invoice. And as you can see here, you know, we've got the websites and SQL servers and how many you have, how many hours they've been running. So we've got all that accurate data, and you have the ability to charge for this any way you want, per hour, based on network usage, etc. So there's heavy functionality. What is really exciting for a service provider is we actually can, because we look at all of your costs, and we're pulling in data, labor costs. You may be not charging those to the end customer, but that's a cost side of your P&L statement. We're tracking your costs as well as the revenue that you're charging to the customers, so you can see the profitability that you have on a per client basis to make sure that you've got a healthy business. And you can even drive that down and look and drill into the different subscribers within each company and look at their usage and look at your profitability. Now, if you're not getting the profitability that you want, it's very easy to go into cost management, select, for instance, your SQL servers. And in this particular case, maybe we're seeing that we're not getting enough activity with SQL Server. People are not using it. So we're going to put in a promotion. We're going to tier some pricing. And what we'll do is we're going to have one free and then normal pricing. And the one free is obviously $0 per day. And the normal pricing is going to be, you know, $3 per day. And it's very easy to do that. What it does a lot of demand shaping for you so that all of your clients or a set of clients, you get them to try out SQL Server because you get the first one for free. Then beyond that, that's where they start paying. So you can use that in many different ways to do different demand shaping within this as well. Very, very flexible. And I can set that up to happen at a specific date in the future and end at a specific date as well. So quite powerful. As I mentioned, we can pull data from many, many different sources, labor, facilities, power, cooling, so that you've got a complete P&L and charge for your services as IT pros to add services to those customers as well. So with that, that's what I have for my live demo, but I wanted to describe how we tie in. We've got a very tight integration into Azure Services for Windows Server and System Center with those REST APIs, pulling subscriber data. It's a very simple setup. You just need a single VM. It takes you 10 minutes to install our product, and it starts instrumenting Azure Services for Windows Server right away. The trick is you got to decide what are you going to charge for your VMs, for your SQL Server. That's what's going to take you the time, is to think about your business as opposed to thinking about the technology. And it's very extensible as well. We can tie into general ledger systems so that if you're an enterprise, we're doing transactions against various different budgets, or we can tie straight into a credit card fulfillment agency to do debits and credits. So that would be an interface that we have as an extensible addition. So that kind of gives you an idea of our integration and value add for Azure Services for Windows Server. We think the strategy that Microsoft is putting forward today, having a consistent feel for Azure public cloud and from a Azure Services for Windows hoster, making that the same, is really going to accelerate cloud deployments both in the enterprise and service providers. And we're there to help you and help Microsoft in this whole space. So with that, I'm going to pass it back to Mark.
That was good. Oh, thanks. Right, so we're just wrapping up now. So let me summarize what you've seen. So you've seen Microsoft taking the technology that we've, you know, and the experiences that we've gotten by running our own large-scale service for infrastructure as a service and for PaaS, right? Brought that on-premise, have it run on Windows Server, and made that available for hosting service providers in this version and enterprises in future, right? And you know, this should give you a good, I think I lost my slide, a good idea of what will be available from us going forward. Okay, you can download the bits for Windows Azure Services for Windows Server from the microsoft.com/hosting/en/us/services.aspx website. I had it up there in my slide, but it's not there anymore. It's actually in Anjali's slide, too, at the beginning. you know, you just try out System Center 2012 SP1 with Virtual Machine Manager and Service Provider Foundation and Windows Server 2012. So I think that's all we have, so I'll be happy to take questions. We have a little bit of extra time right now. If you don't want to go up to the mic and do it now, we can end and we can, you know, come up to the stage if you have anything. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah, so in this version, the version that we made available for general availability in January doesn't have Active Directory integration, but that's something that's going to come in the next version. So I'd say stay tuned for some announcements in TechEd. Yeah, okay, so the question is, when I initially set up the plan in my demo, I showed setting up a plan, okay, and it had a certain quota associated with it, And that created a user role in VMM that had those settings. So I think the question was, say I go back to the plan in the admin portal and I change the settings, what happens to the existing user roles? Okay, so right now, for now anyways, the new subscriptions will have the new settings. The existing subscriptions, out of the box, we don't have a mechanism to automatically update those. We know that's something that is maybe a behavior that we want to have all the subscriptions consistent, so we're looking at automating that. For now, you would have to have a runbook or something that if you wanted to do that, or some other process to go update the existing subscription. So that's how it works right this second in this current version. Anybody else? Oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so so the question was, what about the template and the SQL Server? So for the SQL Server, it's just databases on a SQL Server. That's it. Okay, so there's no configurations, pre-configured stuff besides that. It's not a true database as a service thing. Okay, for the VM templates, are created in Virtual Machine Manager. So you just take, go to Virtual Machine Manager, you create a template as an admin or a content author, and then you save that. The APIs will expose those to the admin portal, and you get to pick which ones to use. In the future, we're looking at how we kind of have a central library of these things. So that's another thing that we're looking at going forward. That's a good question. Do you have them right there? Yeah, so the question is how much does this thing cost? So this thing is free. So, to use the virtual machine part, you need, System Center licenses. You know, you need Splaw as a hosting provider, for example, so. Yeah, so the metering is at whatever, I forget what granularity, but you can do it on paper use or metering of the usage. So those are both possible. You don't have to do it per VM or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Track the actual usage of the Microsoft license in service provider license agreement, especially in the scope of shared systems?
So, The question is, do we track Microsoft licenses like SPLA agreements and such? We actually have a service provider we're doing SPLA license management for. So as we install, we can see software, and we do a report for them so that they can do reporting back to Microsoft on a monthly basis for their SPLA agreements.
Anybody else over here? Oh, go ahead. Uh-huh. So the question is, will there be ITSM or service manager-like integration? That's something that we're looking at. Right now we don't have plans, so it would be great to get your feedback, how would you want to use it, maybe offline. But that's a good one, especially when we get down to enterprises. What do you mean? Are you talking about other components? Okay, so question is, what components of System Center are used by this service? So right now, Virtual Machine Manager, Service Provider Foundation, Orchestrator, and the Operations Manager Data Warehouse. Anybody else? We can take questions offline. So thanks a lot, everybody.